Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Good morning. It is time to get up and get out for the Nets. KD, KO'd. Kyrie has a lot to say. We've got all the reaction. Meanwhile, oh no, this can't really happen, can it? Sixers sliced. Embiid talking about Harden. You need to hear it all, and you will, every word. Plus, the man with the biggest decision to make on draft day tells you exactly what he plans to do with his disgruntled superstar. Oh, what a morning we have in store. And delighted you've chosen to get up with us here on ESPN. We're ready to roll. That's Fowler. That's J.J. Redick. That's not all. We got plenty to put together this morning. Uncle Seth Greenberg, no relation. Dominique is so excited, he's not even in his chair. Mike Tannenbaum is ready to roll. Let's do it. J.J., we begin last night across the river behind us. The Borough of Brooklyn game of the night. Celtics, Nets, Celtics with a 3-0 advantage trying to put it away. Kevin Durant had not been aggressive enough through this series. He came out shooting last night.
He was great last night. That's the thing we kept saying over and over again in game three. It was the lack of aggression that was surprising.
He had 20 in the first half last night. Second quarter now, Jason Tatum. The emergence of a superstar in this series. Celtics had assists on 15 of their 20 made field goals in the first half. They were up by 8. Third quarter, more Tatum. Look at the size.
Every time the Nets needed to get a stop, they couldn't do it. It was Brown. It was Tatum. It was Smart.
And last night, it was mostly Tatum, 29 points. Look at the moves. Little Hakeem Olajuwon footwork. Celtics go to the fourth quarter up 12. But now, big moment, under 3 minutes to play. Tatum has 5 fouls, and that's his sixth. It's an inexcusably terrible call.
I was at this game live watching this. This was a terrible call.
Unimaginable. But it gives the Nets life, and then so does Kyrie. He drills a 3. He had 20. It's a 3-point game. A few possessions later, same score. Durant sizing up his man. He would score 39. That one made it a 1-point game with Tatum watching helplessly from the bench. Under 30 seconds to go. Nets are down by 3. Durant bringing it up. Marcus Smart going for the steal and he's called for the foul. So Durant is going to go to the line. 22 seconds left, down by 3. He would make the first, so it's a 2-point game. But he misses the second, and then for reasons known only to them, the Nets are not fouling. And so now the ball goes up the floor. We got Smart, it's no good, and no one is boxing out Al Horford. Appropriately, that's how the season ends, with a complete breakdown in fundamentals. The Brooklyn Nets are out in a sweep. 116-112 is the final. Let's hear from KD and company when it was finally done.
No regrets. I mean, it happens. You know, no crying over spilled milk. It's about how we can progress and get better from here. We can't have no regrets on what we did. It just played out the way it played.
I think it was just really heavy emotionally this season. We all felt it. I felt like I was letting the team down at a point where I wasn't able to play. And I think it became a distraction at times. And, you know, as you see, we just had some drastic changes. But now we just turn the page and look forward to what we're building as a franchise and really get tougher.
All right, if there's such a thing as a close sweep, this was a fairly close sweep. The Nets lost game one at the buzzer. They lost game two after having a 10-point halftime lead. Overall, they wound up losing the four games by a total of 18 points. You see on your screen there, it's about as competitive a sweep as we've ever seen in the postseason. But that might be the definition of damning with faint praise. By the standards of a sweep, it was pretty close. Let's bring in my Uncle Seth, Seth Greenberg, no relation. What's your number one takeaway, Seth, from this series as it ends last night?
The Celtics were a better team. They defended with a greater purpose. Offensively, they attacked matchups and exploited matchups. And defensively, it took the other team's best player out of the game. Having said that, how do you expect the Nets to be a good team? They had their core group together for 21 games. You don't develop an identity. You don't develop a trust. You don't develop an understanding of what it takes to win at the highest level, especially in the playoffs, when you have Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant together for only 21 games. They lacked a toughness, a discipline, a commitment defensively, but the Celtics won this series flat out.
So I think all the things you just said can be true. The Celtics deserve all the credit in the world. Their coaching staff deserves all the credit in the world. They're going on. We'll have plenty of time to talk about them. Today feels like the day to dissect what went wrong. So, JJ, having played in the league, what, 12 years? So
15, you were 15.
15 years. 15. I shortchanged you three of them. That's my bad.
Wow. However, Seth, did you hear that?
However many years
more
you
played. More pension money he's taken away from you.
You played a long time. The point that I'm trying to get to is this. Seth just said they weren't together much, which clearly was the case. I think there was a feeling amongst a lot of people, perhaps including them, that so long as they just got to the playoffs and they were together then, that they'd figure it out. Is that an unreasonable expectation? Or was it something about this group that they just couldn't do it?
It is an unreasonable expectation. And I think this entire season, from the Nets and the Lakers' perspective and across the league, it's a little bit of a cautionary tale about roster construction.
Tell me.
Because it's very difficult to have an extremely top-heavy roster without depth, especially when that depth or your superstars are not homegrown. Kevin Artovitz a couple weeks ago had a great article on ESPN about homegrown superstars. You look at the Celtics last night, the majority of their players were drafted by Boston. Al Horford had been there before. Tice had been before. There's ownership there. The Nets, Nick Claxton was the only player that played last night that was drafted by the Nets.
Right.
I've said this all season. When you get down to crunch time, and we saw this in this series, when you get down to crunch time, you need two-way players on the court. Brooklyn Nets did not have enough of those. On the other side for Boston, Grant Williams, Jaylen Brown, Marcus Smart, Jason Tatum, Al Horford. They've got a roster constructed of two-way players.
So there's a million different ways we can look at this thing. Let's start with Kyrie and KD, because KD's going to be there. He has signed an extension. He's not going anywhere. Kyrie, and we'll hear more from him as the hour goes on, but he was talking about being there long-term. Is that the making? You're talking about super teams, essentially. Seth, can you put together a championship team around those two players and their skill sets?
You could put together a championship team. Obviously, you got two of the greatest offensive players in the history of the game. Here's the problem. It's what about those other guys? What about 3 through 8? What roles are those guys going to play? You've got to have guys that fit roles that complement your two best players. This team didn't. You've got to have multiple positional players. You got to have guys who can get stops. You got to have guys who can make shots. You got to get guys that are going to do all the little things to help and complement these two guys. They don't have that right now. So, one, they've got to be together. Number two, they've got to find the right pieces around these two guys to open up the floor, to give them space to make plays. And then I think the other thing is, they've got to have greater agility. I thought, and you don't want to, I'm not trashing any coach, but that team right there did not take advantage. And a lot had to do with, obviously, they were only together 20 games. But I thought the best game Steve Nash coached was yesterday of the series. Without a doubt, not even close. Going zone, the way they defended, the way they went with the small lineup, the way they attacked matchups. I thought that was the best preparation they had the whole series.
All right, let's talk about Nash for a minute here, JJ. Obviously a great player, obviously faced unimaginable circumstances this year. I mean, basically from the very start of the year. Kevin Durant said last night he believes Nash is the right guy going forward. What do you think?
I agree with that. And if we look at the situation that Nash has, I don't want to use the word endured, but Nash has endured over the last two seasons, you've got the Harden trade, of course, the Harden injury, Kyrie's injury in the playoffs, Kyrie taking personal leave last year, Kyrie missing most of this season, Joe Harris getting hurt. He got dealt a bad hand. And certainly if you are a coach or a GM, you're going to critique your decision-making, your rotations, your game plans, all of that. That will happen in the offseason, but he should be the coach of the Brooklyn Nets next season.
And then I want to ask you about something else Seth just said. He just said it's about 3 through 8. Well, we all know who 3 is supposed to be, and that's Ben Simmons. Yep. And you obviously were a teammate of his. We were together Saturday night on the court. I saw you go over and have a moment with him. Would he have made a difference? If Ben Simmons had been healthy, what would we be talking about right now?
They'd still be playing this series. I don't know that there's a better team than the Celtics with Ben Simmons. But Simmons would have made a difference, and specifically on the defensive end, as we talked about. He's an all-NBA level defender. And the loss of Joe Harris is big. He's a bigger wing. He provides floor spacing. He's not a great individual defender, but he's a good defender. I go back, And when I think about this Brooklyn Nets team, I go back to the Harden trade.
Yeah.
I really do. Because that Harden trade took away a lot of their depth. It took away an all-star center in Jared Allen, who I think would have fit perfectly on this team.
It brought back Andre Drummond.
It brought back
Seth Curry.
Exactly.
And for whatever that's worth, yeah. Look, I mean, that's actually a perfect segue. James Harden has his own problems right now. We'll have more on the Nets as we go. Give me the Sixers last night at home against the Toronto Raptors, because this didn't go so well either. A funny thing happened on the way to a suite for Philly. They're now in a dogfight. Game 5 last night, Sixers trying to close it out. Scotty Barnes, meanwhile, of Toronto, showing why he is the rookie of the year. Defense, offense, coast to coast, and it's a layup. Moments later, Pascal Siakam. Look at him, JJ, in the lane.
He's been so good this series. We've seen the complete skill set, 22-7-5 in this series.
12-0 run at that point for Toronto, and then it's Joel Embiid blocked, and we're going the other way, and it's OJ Anunoby hitting a three. He had 16. Raptors up 13 at the half. Fourth quarter, Sixers are down by 11. James Harden doing what he seems to do best now, turning it over. We're going the other way. We got a 4-on-1 break. Where are the blue shirts? Throw it up. Achiuwa throws it down. Raptors throw him out. They're going back to Toronto for a game 6. 103-88. Hey, Joel, how about James Harden?
I've been saying all season since he got here, you know, he just needs to be aggressive and he needs to be himself. That's not really my job. That's probably on coach to talk to him and tell him to, take more shots, especially if they're going to guard me the way they've been guarding. But that's really not my job.
I love it. I love it when players say exactly what they think through the media and then say, but it's not my place to say that. It's the coach's place to say that. JJ, he's saying James Harden needs to look like James Harden instead of whatever it is he looks like right now. For the fans who aren't watching closely, what does that mean?
Well, here's the problem.
What's the problem?
We've seen this trend now for several weeks where James Harden doesn't have the burst to effectively get by people consistently. He doesn't have the lift to finish consistently. He's 12 for 31 inside 10 feet in this series. I've said this multiple times. For the 76ers to be a real championship contender, for them to have a chance to win the Eastern Conference, James Harden, he doesn't have to shoot more. He has to score efficiently, and he hasn't done that for weeks.
Seth, how much trouble are they in here? They were up 3-0. No team has ever blown a 3-0 knee. Now they're going back to Toronto. No Thibel again north of the border. They could be staring at a game 7. How much trouble are the Sixers in right now?
I think they're in trouble because they can't impose their identity on the game. Right now, Toronto's playing the game they want to play. They're playing it in open floor. They're creating turnovers. They're playing ahead of the defense. They're opening up the floor with space and playing downhill, 56 points in the paint. Their ability to own the identity of the game with their smaller lineup, but their long athletic lineup, is a problem. And Scottie Barnes, I told you about Scottie Barnes coming when he was a freshman in college. Mm-hmm. I said he's got a little Scottie Pippen in him. That might have been an understatement, but that's the type of versatility he does have. I love the way Toronto's playing because I love that they have the ability to force the Sixers to play to their identity.
JJ, give me a final thought.
Whether they make it out of this series or not, we're seeing this trend across the NBA. You need big two-way wing defenders. The Raptors have that in abundance. The Bucks have that in abundance. The Heat have that in abundance. And the Celtics have that in abundance. Those are the best teams right now. Now, the 76ers may very well beat the Raptors.
Right.
But we're seeing this with Harden especially.
Well, what you just named could be the four teams that survive into the next round in the Eastern Conference. Guys, stay there. Much more basketball as we go. But, oh, by the way, the NFL draft begins on Thursday. And that's where we go next, where the biggest pre-draft story continues to be the trade request of Niners receiver Deebo Samuel. Yesterday, the 49ers general manager John Lynch talked about the predicament in which he finds himself and his team. Here's what he said.
I can't ever imagine, wanting to move on from Deebo. You put yourself through the exercises of, even though we don't have a first round pick, you have to be thorough in this process and prepare for everything. And so you go through and do that. He's just too good of a player. We've got nothing but love for him and nothing but appreciation for what he's bought, but you just don't let guys like that walk. So I can't envision a scenario where we would.
Can't imagine a scenario where we would trade him. Jeremy Fowler, Dominique Foxworth. But Mike T, I'm coming to you. As a general manager, what did you just hear from that GM in San Francisco?
That was GM speak 101 on how to tamp down the noise and try to calm down the situation. But behind the scenes, Greeny, I'm going to go see Deebo Samuel, and I have a tremendous sense of urgency because I have to rectify the situation by Thursday night, and here's why. If we can't solve the problem, whatever it may be, economic or non-economic, he just doesn't like the West Coast, whatever it is, we have to find out by Thursday night, because if we can get a first-round pick, and let's say you're Jets, Greeny, with the 10th pick, we may have to make the decision that if we're going to trade him, which we don't want to do, we'd rather come out of this with a first-round pick than have a massive headache come July.
So then let me turn to my insider extraordinaire, Jeremy Fowler. What are you hearing about the likelihood that he is traded between now and Thursday night?
Well, Greeny, I just checked with somebody involved. I was told that the 49ers definitely do not want to trade him, but it's believed they're at least willing to listen to some offers here, which could deepen the intrigue in the next 48 hours leading up to the first round of the draft. I am told the New York Jets have some interest. I'm told the Detroit Lions, Green Bay Packers all have some interest. Some of those teams believe that the 49ers will not deal him, that he means too much to their offense, but they're at least going to try. And I continue to hear that Deebo Samuel is dug in here, that the usage of him as a running back and a wide receiver and the wear and tear is only part of the issue.
Okay, but if it is even part of the issue, that then, Dominique, brings me to this question, because you played corner and you've talked a lot about the receivers in the NFL that even to this day that you're long retired, you still have nightmares about the idea of going up against them. If you take that dimension out of his game, what we all fell in love with in Deebo Samuel was him doing everything for this team. He was probably their best running back last year. If right. you take that away, what exactly is he, Nick?
Yeah, I mean, his versatility is what makes him particularly special. He's still a very good receiver, and I think he would help out any quarterback. He's going to make Zach Wilson 10% better just by being there. You can throw him a short pass that he can turn into a big touchdown, which really helps out your team and particularly young quarterbacks. But I do think that what makes him special is that versatility. But if I'm him, I'm also trying to get away from or get out of that backfield, because that's shortening your career, and they're not going to pay you like a running back and a receiver, so you shouldn't have to do both unless you want to.
But that's a complicated one to me, Jeremy, because what makes him valuable is that. Like the point is, he's not Devontae Adams. He's not Tyreek Hill. He is sort of his own unique thing. And if you take that away to the point that Nick just made, I'm not sure if most people think he is that upper echelon wide receiver in the purely classic sense. So I don't know exactly how that impacts the value.
Yeah, teams are torn on that. They're not so sure that he's a top seven, top 10 receiver just based on that alone. And the new team is going to want to use him,
right,
maybe not in the backfield, but to use him all over in some hybrid roles.
And they're going to have to pay him is the point, right? They're going to, he's getting to the final year of his rookie deal. So whoever trades for him is not only going to give up something, right, but they're going to have to pay him too.
And I don't know that he'd be more valuable to any other team but the 49ers. I talked to somebody with the organization who said, we couldn't break the huddle last year without Deebo Samuel. He was our MVP. That's how valuable he is to them, which is why there's still a chance he's not traded.
Or that he'd fit very well into the Jets. They couldn't break the huddle without him last year either. I mean, Tannenbaum, let me come back to you on this. Is there a receiver, because everyone is talking about the Jets here. I don't bring it up because it's my own, they have the 4 and the 10 pick. Is there a receiver that will be available, let's say at 10, that you would identify if you were in San Francisco and say, that's the guy I can bring in here and I won't miss a beat?
Absolutely. There's three of them. Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, the Ohio State receivers, Jameson Williams, who's coming off of an ACL but has Tyreek Hill type speed. So again, I agree with everything that said. He's a great, great player. But if I'm the 49ers and I can get the 10th pick, that's going to average, as Hembo just reminded me, about $5 million a year. Deebo's going to be about five times that amount of money. Yeah. So not ideal to lose Deebo Samuel. But that's why if I'm John Lynch, there's a huge sense of urgency. I need to know by Thursday, can I solve this problem with Deebo Samuel? If I can't, I'm simultaneously talking to Joe Douglas, the GM of the Jets, trying to reach agreement in principle. So I, on parallel tracks, I'm having these conversations, Greeny, so I can make the best decision for our team.
It's fascinating. I mean, there are these two storylines, this one and then the Baker Mayfield one that we'll get to a little bit later, that really kind of dominate the conversation as we lead into the draft on Thursday night. Nick, put a ribbon on it as far as Deebo is concerned. How do you see this situation playing out over the course of this week, and what do you think would be the best case scenario?
Yeah, I think the best case scenario is that he stays in San Francisco. They end up paying him and they alter his role going forward, because I think what Jeremy said was important. This offense was dependent on Debo and what he brought to that team last year. I'm sure that he does want some changes, but I got to be honest with you. Money normally solves a lot of those problems. Pay the man like he deserves to be paid, and I'm sure he'll come to the realization that the best place for him is in San Francisco, and the best place for San Francisco, or the best player for San Francisco, is Debo Samuel.
It is really surprising, because I think most of us, yeah, if you watch the video when they lost that championship game to the Rams and he was sitting there crying, I think we all fell in love with him. Look how much he wants this. He seemed like he loved being a part of that team. Does seem as though it could come to an end here in the next 48 hours. We will see. In the meantime, we continue with more football. Could Baker Mayfield wind up being the steal of draft week? Could he be traded in the next 48 hours? We have the very latest and all the insight coming your way in this hour. Plus, who is in charge in Brooklyn? Did you hear what Kyrie said about his role within the future of the Nets? If you haven't, you aren't going to believe it. And it's on the way. You're watching Get Up. I'm on ESPN.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code PARLAY and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code PARLAY. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Get Up is brought to you by Hulu Plus Live TV. Over 75 live channels now with Disney Plus and ESPN Plus. Meanwhile, Neek, I need you to see this, all right? So Micah Parsons, superstar at football, maybe not so much hockey. He's at the Hershey Bears game for the puck drop, but he doesn't seem to realize he has to wait for the players to be ready. So he just goes out there and drops the puck.
Oh man, I don't believe it. Micah Parsons is good at everything. This must be Photoshop or something. The man can play corner, linebacker, outside rusher. Look at that. That's a perfect drop right there. Well done.
That is, I have to admit, I'd read that happened. I hadn't seen it until just then. That's the funniest thing you're going to see today. All right, as we go, much more on Kyrie's future in Brooklyn. Is managing the franchise now part of his job description? We'll talk about that with J.J. Redick, and we're putting him under the microscope. Here we go, J.J. Who was the NBA champion the last year in which neither KD nor LeBron won a playoff series? That's a great question. The answer is next. It's Get Up on ESPN.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use the code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use the code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
All right, we are back, and JJ is getting an education in just how seriously we take this sneaky hembo time on Get Up. Who was the NBA champ the last time that neither KD nor LeBron won a playoff series?
All right, I've gone back in my brain year by year, and I think I've narrowed it down to either 2006 or 2005. So six, the Heat won. Five, the Spurs won. I'm going to go with the Spurs.
That's right. That's exactly right. It was the Spurs in 2005, LeBron's second season. Oh, and if you know, you know. Hembo was particularly devastated by this today. In the meantime, let us show you the reason why fans in Brooklyn this morning are devastated. If you're just getting up and joining us, game four last night, Celtics looking to put away KD's team. A fourth quarter, Celtics would lose Jason Tatum here. He was the best player in this series. He fouled out. Kyrie Irving knocks down a three to make this a three-point game, so the Nets have a chance. A few possessions later, Durant would put it in. He would score 39. It's a one-point game. Under 30 seconds to go. Nets are down by three. Durant is bringing it up. We're going to get a foul here on Marcus Smart. So Durant is going to go to the line with 22 seconds left and his team down by three. He would make the first. He would miss the second. For the life of me, I don't know why they're not immediately fouling, but they're clearly not. At they go to Jaylen Brown, who's going to throw it up the floor. They're going to miss a layup, but no one's even considering boxing out Al Horford. That's the way it ends. Celtics 116, Nets 112. It's a sweep. And then after it was over, Kyrie Irving was talking about his and the team's future. Here's what he said.
In terms of my extension, man, I don't really plan on going anywhere, so, you know. This is, like I said, this is added motivation for our franchise to be at the top of the league for the next few years. When I say I'm here with Kev, I think that it really entails us, you know, managing this franchise together alongside Joe and Sean and just our group of family members that we have in our locker room and in our organization.
Okay. So, Uncle Seth, no relation. When he says he plans on being there, he thinks he and KD are managing the franchise now, along with Joe, that's the owner, Joe Tsai, and Sean, that's the general manager, Sean Marks. What do you think of that, Seth?
Well, he was also going to be a Celtic for life. But having said that, I mean, he's going to coach the team. He's going to manage the team. He's going to put together the roster. Like, here's the most important thing. Kyrie, be present. Be engaged with your team. Actually show up more than 21 times during the course of the season. Be accountable. Be responsible. Try to lead. So, look, it's Kyrie being Kyrie. Kyrie is always going to say something that's going to get you to react to him and bring attention to him. And putting him in the same conversation as KD, come on now. KD is present. He's involved. He's engaged. The other guy talks about being engaged.
That's well said. You know, though, JJ, and again, you played in the league 15 years. On some level, he's just telling the truth. Like, it might make me a little bit crazy to hear him say it. It might sound like a very unself-aware thing to say, considering the year they've been through. But the reality is that franchise has just handed itself over to KD and Kyrie. So on some level, he's just saying the quiet part out loud.
It's a great point. And the optics of that word, and given his backstory and everything that's happened, what he said about Steve Nash and them not needing a coach.
Right.
Like, I get the reaction to this, but you're 100% spot on. Look, I had input sometimes on personnel decisions. I would talk to the owners. I would talk. I was a bit role player. I was not a superstar like Kevin and Kyrie. The reality is every franchise operates this way. They allow the star players to have some level of input on management. Sean Marks is more than capable. He's proven himself to be a top-level GM. Steve Nash can coach. Let those guys do their jobs, but they're always going to have input from Kevin and Kyrie. That's the reality of the NBA.
I get it. I guess the saying of it is the part that is people are going to react to after the year they just had, because as Seth just said, I mean, Kevin Durant can get up there. He can look you in the face. He may not have had a great series. He was outplayed by Jason Tatum, but he can say, I did everything I could this year. Kyrie can't say that. And if you can't say that, whatever the reasons are, it's very difficult, I think, then to also say, and going forward, you know, Kevin and I can sort of run in the joint here. That's the part of it I think is going to rub people the wrong way.
And that's very fair. And again, when we talk about the sort of the background of Kyrie, there's Seth brought up the availability. This has been his whole career. There's been availability issues in terms of average games played per season. He's not going to be a guy. I don't know that ever that will play in 78 to 82 games or 75 to 82 games. That's just not who he is.
Well, I'll tell you this, because Stephen A. yelled this number at me multiple times on Sunday. Over the course of his 11-year career, Kyrie Irving has played more than 60 games four times. So seven of his 11 seasons, he has missed at least a quarter of the season. That is the history. Having said that, let's take one moment, if we can, to celebrate the other side. So, Seth, the other night, JJ and I were here, and the three of us got into a discussion, you, me, and Adrian Wojnarowski, yeah, about if you were starting a team right now from scratch, how many guys would you take before you got to Jason Tatum? And at the risk of sort of diving down that list right now, how would we describe the level that Tatum has taken it to, Seth? Are we seeing not just a star, but a legitimate NBA superstar being born before our eyes?
He is a superstar. He is emerging as Kevin Durant 2.0 is what he's emerging as. And think about not only the big shots he makes, but his vision, his ability to make the game easy for other people, him reading the defense, picking his spots. Yeah, he can shoot the three. Yeah, he can post up. Yeah, he can get in the lane and draw a foul. But it's his passing, his decision-making. Two plays stood out to me. The end of the first half yesterday. First time he comes off a screen, reads the defense, drops a dime. The second time he short rolls, catches the ball in the middle, makes the pass to Grant Williams in the corner, open three. He does. He is a winning player that understands exactly the moment. And when the moment shows, he basically embraces it. Look, to me, he's Kevin Durant 2.0. I know that's kind of extreme after this series, but that's how I feel.
When Jason Tatum signed his rookie extension, he obviously had a clause in there that if he made All-NBA team, he got the full Supermax rookie extension. He didn't make All-NBA last year. Cost him $35 million. It's a bad rule. We need to redo this with the league and the union. He had a slight uptick in points, rebounds, and assists, actually dropped in three-point field goal percentage. But two things happened this year that were different, and it's why he's going to make first-team All-NBA. Number one, the Celtics won. And number two, he became a dominant two-way player. He was the leading defensive win share person on the number one defense in the league. We witnessed that all series. He took whatever matchup, including Kevin Durant, for most of every game.
So to wrap it up, the conversation about this team for this hour, and we will have much more on it, including Stephen A. a little later. But we're looking at an Eastern Conference now. The winner of Toronto and Philly. The winner of Miami and Atlanta. And then we'll get to the Jazz and the Mavericks here. And we'll talk more about this a little bit later, guys. Sit tight. But in the meantime, let's go to Jazz and Mavs. Game 5. Luka and the Mavericks taking on Utah in Game 5. And this one was all Luka. He's just come back. Remember, there's only his second game back after the injury. But look at him hitting the one-legged shot. And then look at this play inside. That's Rudy Gobert. That's a first-team all-defense. Defensive player of the year. And Luka just making him spin like a top. Mavs up 52-36 at the half. Third quarter, Mavs leading by 30. And look at Doncic here, grabbing the pass, draining the three. He would score 33, and you know who loved it? Patrick Mahomes loved it. He's in the building. He's watching and having fun. Dallas again running away and hiding. Two things worth seeing at the end of this game. First, you got Doncic driving in here, and that's Hassan Whiteside hitting him hard. And a scrum would ensue. I don't know that he meant anything by that. It looked like he's trying to pick him up there, but one way or another, the Dallas team seemed to take exception to it. He would wind up getting thrown out of the game. And then this one, the Jazz are down 28 with 4 minutes left. Donovan Mitchell is still in the game, and he hurts his hamstring. It's not clear yet just how bad it is. He had an MRI. We'll find out. But again, he's on the floor, basically a 30-point game with 4 minutes left. Out he goes, and the Mavs win big. They're up 3-2, and boy, are they happy to have that guy back. Luka, 33, nearly equaling the combined points of the entire Utah starting five. Utah combined 1 of 20 from deep as far as their starters. Luka made three times that many in half the attempts. All right, back to football we will go as we continue. Will Baker Mayfield be the steal of draft week? Could he be traded in the next 48 hours? We're talking about that and more as we roll on. This is Get Up on ESPN.
Do
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
I don't know the question you're trying to ask.
Be better tomorrow.
I'm not answering this. That's a clown question, bro.
Next.
Mike, why are you in such a bad mood?
What do you care?
What else do you want to know?
Next question.
Your next question.
Next question.
Next question.
I'm not going to answer any questions from you.
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
It is that magic moment where I will provide a series of hard-hitting, provocative football questions to my man, Dominique Foxworth, and we'll see if he can answer them. So, Neek, yesterday for the first time we saw Russell Wilson practicing in a Broncos jersey. So here's the question. Are the Broncos more likely to win their division this year or miss the playoffs entirely?
Man, I hate this question. I hate this question because I hate the answer that I'm going to give, and I think the answer is they're more likely to miss the playoffs. And as talented as that team is, and as good as Russ is capable of being, that division is just so, so scary. Like, I could see them being last place in that division. I could also see them being first place in the division. So since there are 4 teams that could win this division, I think it's more likely that they miss the playoffs. If I have to pick between those 2 options, it's more likely they miss the playoffs than win the division.
It is a devious question, which is the entire purpose of the segment. Next, if I told you that only one and only one quarterback in this year's draft would turn into a franchise quarterback, who would it be?
It's got to be Malik. Like, I think he has. We see that the way that the league is going is these really powerful arm, strong arm, kind of toolsy is the word that people like to use, quarterbacks. He's that guy in this draft. He's not prototypical height, but he's a guy with an arm that's going to get your attention of all the guys in the draft. And, like, I think he's certainly not Josh Allen, but I think that players like Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes is another guy who was not super highly touted coming out of college, but we saw his arm, and Andy Reid thought he could do something with that. So I think that it's potential there, but I don't really know that there is one. But if there's a quarterback that I'm drafting, that's where I'm going.
Oh, I think that's right. Also, you did mention it, but I obviously – you know, he runs with the football as well as any running back in college football in the entire country this year. So he brings that skill set as well. Now, one more. Which rookie wide receiver, the draft one, is going to be this year's Ja'Marr Chase or Justin Jefferson?
You guys have these questions, man. I got to have somebody who's going to break all the records. I guess I'll go with Jameson Williams. Like, I think he's the best receiver in my view in the draft. He's not completely perfect. I think he struggles in getting off of press sometimes. But if you put him in stacks and put him in motion, they'll find ways to get him in the secondary. The man had 15 touchdowns last year, averaging, I think, 48 yards a touchdown. That's crazy. He's a big play threat. And it's not just that he's a speed guy, which he is. You watch him run routes, and he gets wide open. He's one of the few receivers in the draft this year. I wouldn't say few. He is unique in that he's one of the receivers that, when you watch his tape, he has real separation. There's so many guys that make contested catches. He doesn't have to.
Yeah, to be clear, he tore his ACL in the national championship game. Had he not, I think we'd be talking about him in the mix with the top 4 or 5 picks in this draft. As it is, he may wind up going in the top 10. In the meantime, another huge story this draft week, of course, involves the future of Baker Mayfield, who figures to be traded sometime this week as he and the Browns move toward a divorce. Yesterday here on the program, the legendary Monday Dan Orlovsky, described Baker in a way that turned a lot of people's heads. Here's what he said.
I think it gets resolved this week, and I think Baker Mayfield walks away as the steal of the NFL draft. If you're looking at him through the lens of 2020, and you sit there in this draft, and you want a quarterback, and you get to that third or fourth round, and the guy that you don't want is there, and you sit there and say, I'm going to trade a fourth round pick for a guy that 4 years ago was the number one pick in the draft, for a guy that 2 years ago led his team to the playoffs and was top 10 in the QBR, I understand the finances are what they are. That's above my brain power. But Baker Mayfield has the opportunity to walk away as the steal of the NFL draft.
Well, of course, it is certainly not above his brain power, Mike T, and it is definitely not above yours either. You're the general manager. I can see you shaking your head. Take me through this thing. How he's saying this could be the steal of the draft. What do you say?
Absolutely not. Maybe for 1 year, if you're Carolina and you're Matt Rhule, maybe to save your job. But Baker Mayfield fundamentally has limits on his game. He's short by NFL standards, and he came out running a 4.85, and because of that, he's been hurt before, and while I hope it doesn't happen, he could get hurt again because he can't outrun good NFL defensive linemen. Also, when you think about the money, which is part of the equation, take this into context, as Hembo reminded me. If the Pittsburgh Steelers draft a quarterback, Malik Willis or Kenny Pickett at the 20th pick, Greeny, they're going to guarantee $14 million for 4 years. Someone, if they take the entire contract, would guarantee Baker Mayfield $18 million for one. So I don't see it as the steal of the draft, and I think Cleveland's going to be sitting here probably eating, if not all, most of his contract.
I agree with that. Let's take the money out of it for a second. Understanding that that is not only a factor in this, but maybe the most important factor. But for the fans who are not clear on this, if you just put them all in a draft, Baker Mayfield, Malik Willis, Kenny Pickett, whoever else you want to include in the conversation, Sam Howell, Desmond Ridder, the other quarterbacks in this year's draft, would Mayfield clearly, Mike T, be the first pick?
No, I would still take Kenny Pickett over him because Kenny Pickett reminds me of a Chad Pennington, even a Matt Schaub. His athleticism to me is underrated. He's not that much younger, than Baker Mayfield. He's a four-year starter, 49 career starts. There's a lot to like about Kenny Pickett's game, and I'm not so sure if I'm Matt Rhule and I line up Sam Darnold, Kenny Pickett, and Baker Mayfield that Kenny Pickett doesn't give me the best chance to win.
That's fascinating. Dominique, what do you think of all this?
Yeah, I mean, I think Baker would be the best quarterback in the draft this year, but the idea that you are committed to Baker for that amount for this season is kind of scary. But the real scary part is if he comes in and plays like mediocre to slightly above average and your team makes a playoff run, then he's a free agent. And that's the real scary part. It's like, what are you going to do? I don't think that he's the long-term answer. Like, he's not extension-type quarterback money. So I think that's probably what's scaring a lot of teams off is they don't want to be in a situation at the end of this year where they have to decide between Baker or not Baker, which the Browns ran from that situation as quickly as they could.
Jeremy, my insider extraordinaire, help me. What do people around the league see happening here?
Well, the Browns, I'm hearing, are highly motivated to get this done this week. They would like to get that money off their books, but Carolina being the pivot point in the quarterback position at the draft, number 6 overall, I continue to hear that the Panthers are torn on Baker Mayfield, that they're not highly motivated to get something done. There's some people in that building who believe that he's probably not the answer, whether for personality reasons or just the fit on the field. And so teams are really waiting this out. They don't want to pay the money. They're sort of forcing the Browns' hand to potentially have to release him. But I know, talking to some scouts and execs, they are with Dominique that if you're putting him in this pool right now, he probably is the best option off the tape alone at the quarterback position. So maybe day 2 or 3, you could see some movement.
Carolina at 6. Is the expectation that they take a quarterback there?
Not really. There's a feeling right now that there's not going to be a quarterback in the top 10. Carolina, in a perfect world, could trade out of that number 6 spot, yeah, get some extra day 2 capital, and still take a quarterback, maybe like Kenny Pickett, maybe somewhere in the team.
Mm-hmm. That would be their perfect Matt Miller plan. In his the mock draft that I just got sent this morning actually has them trading back. And if someone is willing to come up there, like he has the Jets trading up to get Ahmad Gardner, the corner, to grab him at that 6 spot. Yeah. The Jets have 4 and 10. Yeah. If the Panthers are able to trade back. So that's going to be the intrigue of the night. Dominique, let me ask you one more thing. Not only as a former player, but as the former leader of the NFL Players Association, is there something of a cautionary tale in this Baker Mayfield story about playing hurt? Because let's face it, a year ago, Baker Mayfield felt like a player on the ascent. He had had a good year. He led the Browns to the playoffs, etc. Then this year, he gets hurt. He does what football players are supposed to do. He tries to play through it. His performance suffers dramatically as a result. And now here he finds himself. If he had had surgery week 4, we'd be having a different conversation. Is there a cautionary story in that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that his value would still be much higher. I don't think that the Browns, when they brought in some new leadership, wanted to keep Baker. He was going to be on his way out, but the Browns would have been able to trade him by now because he was coming off of a successful season where they were a few plays away from knocking off the Chiefs. Like, they were a very good team and made it deep into the playoffs, and it wasn't as if this team was dominating on defense. Like, Baker played really well. But I don't know. I guess I wouldn't call it a cautionary tale because that suggests that it's something new. Like, football players have known this forever. My rookie year in the league, Champ Bailey told me there's a difference between being tough and being dumb tough. While he was out there playing through a lot of injuries, being dumb tough, he had already had a $60 million contract. And there's a lot, I mean, any player, any veteran player will pull the young guys aside and tell them this same story. So maybe they can point to Baker as a new age version of that. But we all know it. The teams care about the teams, and the players' best interest comes secondary.
All right, we'll see. Again, all this figures to play out over the next, call it, 48 to 72 hours because you got night one of the draft. Maybe the Mayfield thing doesn't get resolved into day two. We will find out because the draft is coming your way. And again, I'm headed to Vegas right after the show today for the coverage. We're 2 days away. We have every pick once again on ESPN, all the expert analysis you would expect. It's also available on NFL Network, and ABC's coverage will focus on the prospects' journey to the draft. Our first round coverage begins Thursday night, 8 Eastern. All 3 days are also available on ESPN Deportes. As we continue, the end of a disastrous season for KD and Kyrie and the Nets. Irving has so much to say about it. What's next in Brooklyn? Stephen A. Smith in our next hour. Get up on ESPN.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.